When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
All right. Well, back in the saddle, I suppose. Hello. So 2 months, bushfires, and one pandemic later, I come back to you now at the turn of the tide. And indeed, for our 100th, yes, our 100th podcast. Wow, one whole century not out. So obviously, I conveniently plan to return from my holiday for this very moment. So yep, I'm back. Cue the siphoning off of new listeners and maybe the re-emergence of old listeners. And I'm joined by the Moyes and the Kid today, who I heard do a fantastic job in my absence. The Moyes, of course, is Nick. But before we come to him, we come to the Kid in both a literal and metaphorical sense, who is, of course, FPL Stag. And we come to Stag first because, just in case you've missed the Twitter or the Instagram announcements, presumably because you have a life, meaning you're not on social media, young Anthony is from now going to be a permanent fixture on the podcast, an equal bona fide co-host. Yay! Good day, Stag. How are you going?
Hey, Tom. Great to have you back. Welcome back. And first of all, folks, a massive congratulations on making it to the 100. It's no mean achievement to make it there, to have the dedication to get there. So congratulations on getting to that. And secondly, yes, it is great to be on again and in a new capacity now as a perma host. So I'm delighted that my performances have been up to scratch during my time as a caretaker, and hopefully I can repay the faith that the board have put in me. But enough of that from me, of course. This, just to say, we are who got the assist. Our Twitter is WGTA_FPL, or you'll find Nick at WGTA_Nick, or me, FPL Stag, at FPL Stag. We're also on Instagram now as we move into the 21st century, so you'll find us at WGTA.FPL. That's a full stop. So if you're hip enough to be on there, check us out there too. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Right, so Nicholas, what are we going to be talking about this week?
Fantastic to have Stag join us on the pod as a full-time host, and he did a brilliant job standing in for Tom Wint on his travels, having given up his precious for the past couple of months. So yeah, it's our 100th pod this week, which is very exciting. So first, I think we're going to reflect on being 100 not out, talking about a few sort of the highlights, I guess, of the last 99 pods, and just a few momentous moments. And then we're going to be moving on to form versus fixtures in FPL, because we've talked a lot about fixtures, but less so perhaps about form. So we're going to be discussing that. And moving on to our usual features and question section after that.
I guess we start off with the game reviews then, just to get kicked off. Game week 28, one to forget, the lowest average game week, I think, of the entire season, according to the official FPL account. And yeah, it was a really bad one for me. I mean, I saw on the live FPL site that I had a green arrow initially with my 29 pointer this week, but that devolved into a small red. I'm at 375k at the moment. During the time I was away, I had a couple of very good weeks. Well, I triple captain Mo Salah in game week 24, I think that was, and got the 48 points, so that was good. And then in game 25, I wildcarded and got a 77 or something like that. I had a first ever full house of clean sheets. That was good too. And then after that, I just kind of reverted to mediocrity again. Just kind of gone all the way down to the borough of 375k, and this week's 29 did nothing really to do that. I brought in two Leicester boys, Perez and Barnes, thinking, well, you know, I'm going to double pivot into the Leicester game, which we'll talk about later on. And neither of them returned; both got blanks. And it was only, you know, kind of Jimenez and Taylor, Charlie Taylor, who did anything for me, as Mo Salah blanked as well. So yeah, a really bad and boring week for me. I'm not sure that'll be one that we'll be dwelling on for too long. Stag, how'd you get on?
So a little bit better than you, Tom. 40 points, but with a minus 8 hit, which was taken very unexpectedly on Friday. So 32 points was actually enough for the slightest of green arrows. So I'm now at 810k overall. So not exactly all that impressive, but given the context of the week, I'll take it. The initial transfer I made was to bring in Bruno Fernandes for Aldadai Decore, who of course did go on to get an assist against Liverpool and score quite well, but at least Bruno Fernandes came in and scored, so repaid my faith. And then I had quite a bit of budget remaining, and the early team news came out about Leicester, that Vardy was injured. So I wasn't going to hold Vardy anymore for the blank game week. I was fed up of him anyway. So I traded him in for Mason Greenwood, who I suspected would start and was just a good enabler. And I used the budget pretty much just to get a Leicester player in and have Iosi Perez in midfield. So I upgraded Isaac Hayden for him, which, look, on paper it sounded good. I'm happy I took the risk, because this is the sort of thing that I feel I need to do going into these closing stages of the season if I want to get to even the top 100k realistically at this point would be a pretty big achievement. So yeah, look, it was pretty much going into Sunday I had almost no points at all. It was all twos and ones, and then Fernandes, Calvert-Lewin and Jimenez kind of came in for me on the final day. Captain Salah, that didn't exactly work out either, but that happened to everyone else, so we'll take it. We move on, we go again, and we're well set up for the next few weeks. And you, Nick?
I actually took a minus 8 this week. So, yeah, it wasn't the best of weeks. So I ended up with 32 points in total. So, yeah, pretty bad week. Not one I want to reflect on for too long. But I think everyone felt the pain, really, with that sort of fellowship of triple Liverpool, just blanking for everyone and the captain as well. Luckily, I did get returns from Jimenez and Calvert-Lewin on the Sunday. So it wasn't a complete washout. But, yeah, my transfers didn't particularly work out. Harvey Barnes came in on the Friday with the early team news hearing that he would definitely start. Brought him in for Grealish. Reece James came in as well and just got the 1 point. Unfortunately, I brought in the wrong Chelsea fullback. Jimenez was the only part of that minus 8 that did work out as a replacement for Aguero, so he got myself a return. But yeah, all in all, not a great week, and I think it ended up being about a 50k red arrow for me.
Ideal time to talk about the 100th podcast, and we're in celebratory mood after the FPL events of the weekend, huh? But I suppose the first thing to do is reflect upon that. And Anthony, I suppose as the newest addition to our collection, we'll hand over to you for now.
Yeah, great. So I feel like I've taken a few leaves out of the Football Manager press conference playbook, really, with this. You know, 1,000 games in charge. How does it feel, Tom? But that said, there is really an element of, okay, 100 pods is an awful lot. That's more than 100 hours recorded and well over 500 hours probably at least editing for you, Tom, not to mind my little bit as well. And so it's kind of like, can you believe that you've even lasted this long, or that the pod has kind of gained the following it has?
It has definitely been crazy from how we started, which was literally just Nick and I in my living room, recording something, being like, was that all right? I don't know. Who's going to listen to this? Is it going to be all right? Like, do we sound all right? Do we sound weird? Does that all sound a bit strange? I guess now, like, I listened to a couple of like bites from really old episodes, like ones without even a title. Like it just said pod 17 game week 8 or something like that, and we sound so different. I think we sound so much more like stilted and awkward. Okay, probably people might still say we sound stilted and awkward, but back then I really did think we were just like, oh my god, it's so different to how we are now. So if you've persevered with us for that long, god bless you.
Yeah, I can't quite believe that it's been 100 pods. It does feel like a bit of an achievement. As Tom said, yeah, we've come quite far since we first started the pod, just recording, over the summer a couple of years ago, just not really knowing what to do or what we're doing exactly, or if anyone would listen, and just to grow with the community as well, which has grown over the past couple of years, has been amazing.
And so, Nick, I know you're the financial man, so maybe it's you I'll come to with this. So when Arsene Wenger joined Arsenal, he brought a kind of a culture shock to the likes of Tony Adams by bringing in different types of food. He replaced saturated fats with all sorts of sports nutrition. And so kind of in that sense, what was on your list of priorities when you first came to the community? And do you think you've achieved that in 100 pods, Nick?
So I don't know if I was trying to, you know, make a massive impact on the community in terms of changing the way that we think about FPL. I think what we tried to fill a bit of a gap in the market when it came to the podcasts out there, as in there wasn't really like a geeky stats based one. A lot of the other podcasts out there were kind of more about the entertainment, about you know, comedy and jokes. It's not really mine and Tom's things. We're a bit more stilted and awkward, perhaps, as some of our reviews have said. So, you know, we tried to go for our own thing, which is kind of like looking at data, looking at numbers, looking at stats, and try and, you know, present good arguments for bringing in players. And generally, at the end of the day, we wanted to give out advice to our listeners and hope that we've achieved that in over the past 100 pods. Some of the feedback suggests we might have, which is quite nice.
I think it's just kind of looking at, as you said, evidence-based stuff. I think a lot of our kind of annoyance before was talking about your own team and just saying, oh, this happens because I like the player. Like, I think that going beyond that and kind of saying, all right, you need to back that up with something has been one of the things that kind of got us exercised in the first place and thinking, yeah, we'll give it a go. And I'm glad to see that that's kind of, you know, just using stats to back up anything that you say has become a real mainstream thing now. And I think that just wasn't really the case. It was my observation kind of years ago when we started. So, yeah, I think that's been really good. And obviously stuff like talisman and value, people kind of picking up on that and adopting that as part of their kind of thought process as well has been really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe kind of tying in a little bit with what's been kind of interesting to kind of watch. And this is something I've also experienced since I joined the Twitter community and started writing myself. But Tom, it is something you've oft mentioned, that having a podcast has changed your FPL style. Maybe that's a feeling of being somewhat accountable to the people on Twitter and not being able to take the risks that you may have liked to take. So you'd have talked about before that, you know, the season before you launched the pod, you'd had a top 3K rank or something. And maybe the pod has definitely changed your view on how you attack every game week. Has that changed with time, A, with the pod, and B, have you started trying to counter the effect of the pod on your own decision making?
I'm a terrible FPL manager these days. Christ knows why people are still listening to me. I just don't know. I think before, like, I'd make a lot of kind of instinctive decisions, shall we say. Like, I'd take a lot of gambles. I'd look at my mini league and think, okay, who's not owned very much, or who's going to be a unique captain? And it was only within the universe of that tiny mini league. Going on Twitter kind of opened that mini league up to being basically the entire FPL verse, right? So suddenly this kind of whole notion of the top 1%, this whole notion of top 1% finishers, you know, having these ridiculous records, really kind of was something that was in my face a lot of the time. And I think that kind of impacted how I did things. I looked at ownership for the first time ever. I'd never really done that before. And like, all of these kind of created concepts and kind of constructs, I suppose, that I never really thought about, started to have a real impact on my FPLing. And it still continues to this day, where I was still, for example, captain Salah this weekend, whereas I think a few years ago I probably wouldn't have. I'd have done something a little bit different, you know, done the Mark Southerns, and I really wish I kind of had that. But I think I've just kind of, I don't know, maybe I've just lost it. Like, the deal of the devil seems to be that if your podcast does well, your FPL doesn't. So I think I'd probably take it, actually, that my podcast is doing all right. But there you go. I mean, Nick's done all right though, haven't you?
Yeah, so I think before we ever did the podcast, you basically beat me every single season that we played FPL. Even the season where I think I finished about 20K was the season you finished 3K. So it's kind of like I was always kind of in your shadow in terms of scoring FPL. Of course, as soon as we started the pod, you were doing absolutely terribly that first season. And I had, I think I had my best ever finish because I was up at almost like 8K and stuff at one point. And yeah, just holding the fort for the podcast, really, in terms of actual competency. But, you know, last season was okay, not particularly good. And this season's been not particularly good for me as well. I definitely feel like that opening season, just having the, you know, doing the pods week in, week out, gave me that advantage because I had to meticulously look at the data to try and make sure I knew what I was talking about. And yeah, maybe having a child, I've slowed down a little bit in the last season or so, but definitely feel like the opposite, I guess, in terms of Tom, that the podcast has improved my FPL game as opposed to damaged it, supposedly. But perhaps it's also been because I've been less removed. I've been less close to Twitter, like yourself, Tom, and obviously you've been, you know, huge role you've had in the Twitter community in terms of growing the main Who Got The Assist account as well.
So then one other question we got in from a friend of the pod, Adam Pritchard. He was asking, so of all the 100 episodes that we've done, I guess, and you guys have done, who is your favourite and least favourite FPL player in the game?
Supposedly not our favourite FPL manager then, which is how I interpreted this question first. I was like, who can I say is this my least favourite FPL manager outside? I think if it is FPL players, I think if we start with, I suppose since we started doing the podcast, and it came up actually, it reminded me when we did the Twitter thread, just about my experiences with Hazard over the first couple of years, and especially like how some of the guys said that they'd never seen me or never heard me so angry before when I talked about Hazard and how he'd been trolling me. And I used the word troll quite a bit at that point as well, which a few people said I shouldn't be using because it was a negative word and, you know, whatever. It's just poor form that I couldn't pick the player at the right time. But my personal experiences with Hazard, perhaps, whilst I was doing the podcast at least, make him my least favourite FPL player, even though I actually, you know, love to watch a player live and I think he's an amazing talent, an amazing footballer. Just from an FPL perspective, I had an absolute nightmare with the guy. So that's why I've said he's my least favourite, or at least I picked him out as my least favourite FPL player. In terms of my favourite FPL player, I guess since we started doing the pod, I know it sounds a bit cliche, I just had to say it was Mo Salah, just because I think that first season I had him for every single game week, 38 game weeks, and he just really smashed it for me that season. And the second season as well was ever present as well. And so was Andrew Robertson, who was also my second pick in terms of, sort of my favourite FPL player just last season, just being ever present for my side. I think he only missed one week for me, which is sort of like the free hit week. Both of those guys were just absolute sort of stars in terms of contributions towards my FPL performance. So I think those are probably the guys I said best players. I think last couple of seasons it was Hazard. This season I feel like it has to be Rico, who's actually been my only ever-present player this season, to be honest. But he just keeps coming on. He just ends up in my team every week. I don't know why he ends up in the team. He ends up getting 9-pointers on the bench, and then when he comes in, he gets 1-0s or the occasional minus one. It's just like, who is this guy? I can't stand him. So he's my least, and even in like a blank week, he decides not to play at all, which just means no points there either. So yeah, not great.
Yeah, no, not very good at all, yeah. No, I think my least favourite FPL player, oh, that's a tough one, actually.
Surely your bet noir, Tom.
Or Rondon, I think, yeah. Oh, God. I don't know what it was about that guy. I think whenever he was a sort of player, but whenever I kind of even vaguely considered him, he actually did nothing. And then whenever he wasn't in my team, he absolutely smashed it. I think my hatred for him just grew and grew over time. And there was that nice run of fixtures, wasn't it, when he was at Newcastle end of last year and he couldn't stop scoring. And I kind of relented finally one week. I think it was the free hit week, and brought him in. And in that week, in that kind of game week, in that match, he like had the highest XG, had the most shots on target of any forward, didn't score. So I was livid. Never looked at him again. And then went on to score a brace again the next game. Absolute okay. my favourite FPL player. Oh, it's quite a tough one, actually. There are quite a few. The boring answers are probably Sadio Mane. I mean, I think his progression from kind of ex-Southampton also ran to world star has been incredible, and he's been in my team quite a lot. And Raul Jimenez as well, just for the Talisman Theory. Talisman Theory also means Pascal Gross is another one who comes to mind straight away, just because he used to be part of my little kind of cover. As a joke pick as well, it's worth pointing out Bro Potus, otherwise known as Kennedy, who graced my team last season for a good 8 or 9 weeks and did absolutely nothing during that time. An honourable mention as well to a Choupo Mistake, Eric Maxim Choupo Moting, now of PSG fame, who also graced my team for a long time. I think he scored a brace against Man United, didn't he? And we all thought he was the next big thing coming over from the Bundesliga. And then after that, he proceeded to give us a procession of blanks. So there you go. We did reach out to Twitter to ask them a few of their favourite moments, if they remember anything at all indeed. A few kind of things that people said. The first thing was Duffy. I at one point riotously celebrated when Shane Duffy scored a goal when I was on holiday, I think it was at the time. And I remember, Nick, you giving me the news that Duffy had scored, and because you didn't own him, you were audibly pissed off. And there was me running around the little apartment that we were in. So that's been said by FPL King, Rich Nyquist, FPL Chancellor, also and Abinav. Another moment as well is Dab Watch from this year. So Mr. Fish, Late Riser, and also Flapjack have said when Nick's dad was the Magnus Carlsen of FPL. Some of you met the great man over Christmas. And I don't think he's doing as well. We'll talk about Dab Watch this week. personal histories was mentioned. So Rishi, FPL Raccoon, who we've met in real life, had on the pod as well. And FPL Feed the Goat, who we've met at the last couple of meetups, mentioned that our intros with Nick and Tom were quite cool, worth listening to if you want to find out a little bit more about us. But yeah, thanks for that. I'm glad someone actually did bother to listen to those. Nick Savaging Hazard was mentioned by a couple of people. So Samantha and Nick got very angry listening to that. And Hindu Monkey remembered me savaging Joe Hart as well at one point. I believe I
got... Hasn't everyone?
Oh dear me. Other things, people realizing we do themes every week. So FPL JB said he suddenly realized the Rick and Morty references were being made, a flub dub 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 moment. James Q said that he realized the National was there, and Tommy Gemmel said that he knew realized we were doing themes, but he was listening to us and he kind of had an epiphany that we were dropping in themes, so it made him stop jogging for just a second. And one of my personal favorites as well, unnecessary interest in Nick's wife, Death Star FPL and Claret FPL both remember this, a great moment on FPL Twitter when someone said, oh, the voice on that theme is super sexy, and Nick just replied, that's my wife, mate. But yeah, I think we're going to run that section at the risk of sounding too self-indulgent, but thank you very much for all the support. It's been absolutely incredible.
Yeah, cheers guys, thanks for all those moments, brought back a few memories there as well.
Yeah, and many more to come, I'm sure.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and we're going to go to our main section, which is discussing form versus fixtures. And we're just going to be discussing about whether it was bad decisions by us ultimately to focus so much on teams like Leicester, perhaps, which had the fixtures, rather than looking at some of the form players, you know, the likes of Calvert-Lewin, for instance, the likes of Bruno Fernandes and Jota at Wolves as well. And we had some questions generally on this as well. Our first question was from Rich P, who asked us, how many weeks do you wait before buying an in-form player? And the example he gave was of Bruno Fernandes, who is the in-form player right now in the Premier League. And I mean, in terms of my experience, I definitely feel like I have put too much emphasis on fixtures instead of form in the past, and something perhaps I need to look at in terms of my overall game is to try and, you know, not miss the boat so often in terms of these form players just because I'm so obsessed with fixture. You know, the example of Hazard was partly... I was always trolled by the guy because of the fact that I always focused on his good fixtures as opposed to perhaps, you know, trying to find those four moments. And previously, you know, I made mistakes like, you know, with Vardy, never owned him in his winning season for Leicester, and Danny Ings perhaps this season as well, though slightly paid off. With Bruno Fernandes, sometimes there's a little bit of luck involved, I guess. You know, that goal was a shot that Pickford should have saved. Ultimately, it was a shot from range. He is on penalties, but most of his goal attempts are from distance. He has fewer in the box, though. Looking at the underlying stats just from this particular game week, he had 6 goal attempts, which was the most out of all midfielders in the game, and 2 of those were in fact inside the box. So he's definitely a player that's playing with confidence, player in form, and a player that we frankly should be considering for our FPL teams regardless of the fixtures for Manchester United. I mean, unfortunately for myself, I do still have Anthony Martial, and at my time he was my preferred pick over the two, and I feel like I still kind of stand by my reasoning at the time. With the benefit of hindsight, I didn't know about Bruno being on penalties. I saw Martial as a number 9 sort of out of position forward, and I thought he would be taking on that talisman role at Manchester United, though it seems like he's going to be forever the Riker at United. Martial, either be it Pogba, Rashford or Bruno Fernandes, that steps up into that talisman role. Martial, I watched that game and I felt he looked so lethargic when they were going forward. I didn't see any sprinting runs, you know, any counter-attacking pace on him. He just looked like he wasn't in the game at all, which was a bit concerning. Though, you know, I don't know if it's worth a straight swap for that kind of player, you know, to bring in the form player Fernandes, get rid of Martial, who was showing a little bit of form, to be fair, up until that game.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, Bruno definitely is amongst the cohort of players. I mean, Osmo asked us as well about this and highlighted Bruno, Calvert-Lewin, who spoke about, Doherty, Jota, all the players who have form. In contrast, the likes of Vardy, Pereira, and Perez have had the fixture this week and have got the fixture coming up. But form really was the clear winner this week. I guess, kind of, you know, with Bruno, yeah, definitely makes sense to have brought him in. the question is, going forward with those fixtures still, did you still go over the fixtures and think, oh, okay, well, the fixtures aren't that great going forward, so maybe he'll stop the form that he's showing, or do you keep going? I mean, Bruno looks like the reincarnation of Christian Eriksen in FPL, doesn't he? All those kind of long-range shots and lots of creativity, I suppose. It definitely seems to reinvigorate United to some extent. But on Leicester, I think, is quite an interesting one to talk about. Like, was it a bad decision to look at Leicester players this week? One way of thinking about this is through something called outcome bias, which is for digression, is a behavioural science thing, which is also used in poker a little bit. It's called resulting in poker. And as FPL nutbags, I suppose, we make decisions a lot based on information and data analysis, but often we'll fall prey to outcome bias in evaluating how good that decision was. So this week, we looked at Leicester, we looked at the fixtures and thought, you know what? They've got Norwich, Aston Villa and Watford to come. Well, why not jump on? Because at the end of the day, that could be the precursor to form being sparked. Norwich have got the worst goal difference in the Premier League. They still do, minus 26. So surely that was worth a bang. Of course, if you are resulting or you're falling prey to outcome bias or you're crowing on Twitter, you'd be saying, well, getting Leicester players in was obviously a terrible idea. And you're judging the decision based on the outcome rather than the analysis, which actually did make sense. Like, I think it was still a good calculated risk to jump on the Leicester players, because at the end of the day, like, does form exist and can fixtures create form is definitely something worth talking about. Because if you're saying, well, you know, the form wasn't there, what starts to kind of create that form again? Surely fixtures has got to be something which does kind of mean that form starts to appear, because at the end of the day, we're saying that Leicester are never ever going to perform, never ever going to win a game of football, never ever going to score a goal, anything like that. Like, if you are playing the bottom team and the second bottom team, two very leaky teams, surely that is a good time to jump on and kind of hope. What's your take on this, Stag?
Maybe kind of getting back to Rich P's question, which was just asking about really, like, how many weeks do we wait before buying an in-form player? What even is it? And I think how a manager views form is so wrapped up in where their position is. Of course, you're going to play with the majority, just take the safe picks. If you're up around the top 10K right now, you know, you can make marginal gains and kind of get to your probably top 1K goal with just, you know, careful risks, but not going mental. Whereas if you're at 800K like me, you have to jump on someone like Bruno Fernandes early. And so I had him for the last game week. One good game week and that was it. I was in. I guess I was helped by some promising Europa League performances as well. I think he had 5 man of the match performances in his first 5 games for United, which is pretty staggering. But like, look, when you've got a player with proven ability like he had, who was perhaps, in his case, he was a new signing, but it could be another player who was out of form or who had had tough fixtures, who was just kind of coming back in or who was previously injured. Like there's an element of sense there to bringing these players in that maybe isn't there with when some kind of random Connor Wickham type player goes on a run. That's the challenge with FPL. And maybe that's where someone like Diogo Jota now is, like, is he benefiting from form or fixtures or from both? And that is the challenge. Like, we've already seen him absolutely soar in previous years. And then I was just trying to think about, like, there was questions about whether form even exists. And for me, like, I think it's quite clear that it does exist, but because of different reasons. One of those is just classic, you know, talent getting its chance, be that because of a change in the system. We've seen Dele Alli, let's say, benefit from that under Jose Mourinho earlier this year when he first came in. Danny Ings also kind of benefited from Southampton pivoted kind of post the Leicester mauling earlier in the year. They also, maybe could be a change in management, DCL surge, or the post-Ole coming in last season would be two good examples of that, or just recoveries from injury, for example, just talent might get its chance after coming back in again. But then there's also an emergence. And I think it's those emergences that are really what make or break an FPL season. So if you think back a few years ago, we all thought that Dele Alli playing well for a few games for Spurs was pure fluke. But no, it proved not to be. He continued it for the rest of that season, as did Harry Kane in another season, may even have been the same one. Tammy Abraham earlier this season is another good example. Mourinho had ridiculed him pre-game week one. We'd all seen him before playing for Swansea. He'd had a good championship season, but I don't think any of us believed that he could put together the form he did in the early season against particularly easy teams. And then maybe if you look forward, you think, could Mason Greenwood or Bukayo Saka or even the likes of players at clubs who are fighting for survival, your Cantwells, your Pookies, your Hallers, etc., come good in the coming weeks. And then I've just thought of this just to break down a little bit more for people who are listening, because I just thought there were different types of emergences. And there's like there's the financial emergence, and that's maybe to do with bonuses. And there's a really good piece in The Athletic actually just this week, and it was speaking about the importance of securing Champions League football for Arsenal players in terms of their overall salary. I think they said it was like 20% of their overall salary is contingent on Champions League football. And now that they haven't got the Europa League route, that's a pretty good option there for them. Contractually, then there's another one that players who are trying to get new contracts in that... remember Mark Viduka and Yakubu were two classic ones that came in and would turn it on when it was necessary to get a new contract. And then players looking for moves or to get into squads for major championships, the likes of Jack Grealish and James Maddison are effectively in a 1v1 battle for a place in the England squad, or moves maybe to bigger clubs. And then freakish periods are just another thing. So maybe Ighalo's half season at Watford, Richarlison getting his good half season, etc. So maybe that's kind of what I've thought about form. It's almost like a treatise on what is form and what to do with form, but almost like every FPL question we get, it really does boil down to your team, where you are, what you need.
Yeah, I think there's a sort of, you have the benefit of that sort of retrospective analysis to say, oh, Leicester weren't in form, they were out of shape, and that seems to be kind of the general consensus that seems to be around, at least in terms of all the analysis with the benefits of the hindsight. But to be honest, I don't think there was anything wrong at all with picking Leicester players for that Norwich game. It made eminent sense at the time. You know, like, Norwich were a team that bottom of the table, hadn't scored in three game weeks. They'd just been smashed by Wolves 3-0. Supposedly Leicester were struggling for form, but they'd had only played sort of Chelsea, Wolves and City, and it was all tough games, to be fair. You know, I wouldn't have expected 9 points on those games, wouldn't have expected plenty of wins. And, you know, they came out with a couple of draws and a tight loss against Manchester City in what was a close match ultimately, and just a 1-0 defeat. And before that, they'd annihilated West Ham and another team at the bottom of the table 4-1. So looking at that fixture run, I was thinking, right, look, you know, Leicester don't only have Norwich, they've got Aston Villa and Watford and Brighton, so basically playing four teams in a relegation battle. And even though you could argue that Leicester perhaps starting to head towards the beach whilst those teams might have a little bit more to play for, you really had to fancy Leicester in those games. And also, you know, there's a few sort of mitigating factors. We weren't really talking about Maddison as an option, to be honest. We were saying this player's got decent underlying stats, but he hasn't really got... any assists in ages. I think it's been 1,000 minutes since his last assist. So I said, I can't go for this player. Whilst the players we were actually talking about, you know, we were saying, you know, Vardy's an option, but obviously he's been on a huge run of form anyway. He was injured, so it's a moot point when it comes to Vardy. If he had played that game, he might have been able to rediscover his form. We don't know. But the players we were hyping up, I guess, were Harvey Barnes, who was a player in form. He had 3 goals and assists in his last 4 starts for the club. And Ricardo Pereira, who's... the top scoring defender in FPL outside the Liverpool players, and had got a goal and assist in that 4-1 demolition of West Ham. So I feel like, you know, this whole sort of argument, perhaps that the Leicester players was a bad idea, and, you know, some of the arguments people are making, I feel like a little bit unnecessary, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess so. I think the injury to Vardy especially threw a lot of light on this issue. And we've got a question later on about kind of using that early sort of team news. But I think with the upcoming fixtures, we had anticipated the return of the king in Vardy being able to, you know, reassume his mantle. He's still the top scoring forward. I mean, Nick, you just said there that Leicester are on the beach. I'm not too sure about that. I mean, how can you be on the beach if you're in the Champions League positions? I'm not too sure about that one at all. But I can kind of see your point, given the recent stuff. It's almost like they're still in the Champions League positions by default, because no one's doing anything. And it's kind of like just United, I suppose, who are moving forward painfully. I guess just touch on the Stag's points there as well. Like, I guess I think there are definitely lots of kind of elements of what comprises form. Like, even if you do believe in a thing called form, worth giving a shout out to the analytic crew on Twitter. Our friend Simon at Analytic FPL, I'm sure he won't mind me saying that he doesn't believe form exists at all. He said to me on a couple of meetups that it's not really a thing. And I found a tweet of his from October a couple of years ago where he says that we tend to use small sample sizes in our data sets. And then when something does happen, that suits our narrative, we act like it's predictive. So he kind of thinks, well, you know, we need to use more data. We need to be able to understand more from a long-term perspective. FPL Howl in September this year said that too. And We Rogue as well said that form may or may not be real, but he upweights recent data for players. I don't know, form for me is like one of those sort of ineffable things that sometimes makes things happen. It separates kind of a scoring streak. So, you know, Danny Ings going on, I think it was, I looked at the earlier 73 points he got between game weeks 12 and 22. He returned in 11 of the 13 games. Calvert-Lewin, as Stag mentioned, under Ancelotti, from since game week 19, he's returned in 8 of the 10 games, 60 points. So I missed out on both of those. I think it's kind of linked to something called hot hand fallacy, which is the idea that you can be in form. So obviously it's from basketball, the idea that if you get one free throw in, that you're going to then have a higher chance of scoring the next one. Study way back when found that it was all misperception. They said it was the same as slipping a coin. But lots of new research, for example, by Josh Miller, look it up if you're interested, said it's actually okay to believe in the hot hand. So a re-evaluation of the initial study found there's an 11% relative boost in shooting when you're on a hot streak. So there is some evidence nowadays that form does exist. And yeah, I think, you know, given those examples of Ings, DCL, you know, Stag mentioned Harry Kane, the emergence of him, Aaron Ramsey, one of the first ever bandwagons. It definitely does kind of link in. I think there is definitely a thing. When do you jump on? That's the art of FPL, isn't it? Fundamentally, understanding when's a good time, when a player is about to go on a run, and all of the facts that we always talk about, the wide picture, including stats and the itis, is what needs to inform that. It's just such a wide-ranging topic, I suppose, that sometimes you're always going to make mistakes in this regard. And yeah, I definitely regret not jumping on DCL, and definitely regret not jumping on Ings this season. Do you guys have any examples of players that you can think of for whom form was listed by the fixtures?
The main example that I found was Tammy Abraham, and I feel like this season especially feels like the classic example. So he's only actually had one goal against the so-called Big Six and Leicester, that came against Arsenal, and he has seemed like he's a lot more comfortable scoring against his former Championship rivals, who he had previous form against when he was sort of, you know, scoring freely in the Championship. And I guess this shows from his season beginning form. He blanked, as you said. He got criticised for his performance against United and Leicester in the first couple weeks of the season, and then after that he went on this fantastic run, all against these sort of newly promoted teams or recently promoted teams, where he got a brace against Norwich, brace against Sheffield United, and then a hat-trick against Wolves before he then blanked against Liverpool, you know, a tougher opponent. And I think for Abraham, certainly he does feel like that sort of player that, you know, really proved himself against the sort of the teams that he knew how to play against and previously played against, and were weaker opponents compared to, you know, the tougher matches, so to speak.
Yeah, for me, one of those players, Tammy Abraham, is definitely the striking example this season. And I think in previous seasons, we've even seen kind of the inverse Tammy Abraham, which was Raúl Jiménez last season, when Wolves would struggle against mid-table and lower-ranked teams, but they seem to always pull it out against the top six. And I think that kind of nearly undermines just what are fixtures and how important they are, but I think gets at the idea that motivation is such an important thing and how well a team will play as well, and that's such a hard thing to measure. But one player who I did pick out, and maybe I benefited from, so he's strongly in my memory, is Sergio Aguero. I brought him in with good fixtures, purely on with good fixtures in mind, and benefited handsomely really from him just picking up, having a few good game weeks against, you know, what were predictable opponents that, you know, you expected him to do well against. But then, of course, by succeeding with him for a few weeks, I ended up kind of suffering with him as well for a few weeks, as he didn't return against, here we go, bad teams as well. You know, he blanks against the likes of West Ham, the likes of even Spurs, who didn't look like a strong team, to be perfectly honest with you. But then, you know, bangs a hat-trick against Villa, brace against Crystal Palace, and, you know, even picked up one against Sheffield United after coming off the bench, unfortunately, that week for me. And so, like, this is the thing. It's like when it's form versus fixtures, it's the chicken and the egg, really, of FPL. So maybe from thinking about how we judge when is the right time to jump on, because of course the best time to jump on is just before they go on a run, but you're talking about complete luck at that point, which is perhaps what I had with Aguero. So coming as a player who's at 800k right now, like, it's a little bit of form and a little bit of underlying stats, and I'm jumping on it. I think you guys would have, I think, refused to use underlying stats for quite a few weeks at the start of the season because they weren't a, you know, useful base, I guess. Whereas I think at this point, I'll be looking at very short-term underlying stats, maybe even one game. Like even, let's say, Marcus Alonso, all I need is just some sort of positive quote to indicate that he's going to keep his place in that Chelsea team. And I think he's going to come into my side just because... we've already pointed out last week how Chelsea's fixtures are quite okay, not brilliant, but quite okay, and he may be worth bringing in. Like I've been disappointed with myself maybe that sticking with Aguero there is one, but then let's say the fixtures we'd identified, Nick, in the past two podcasts were those of Wolves, and yet I went with Liverpool, even though their form, look, whilst getting consistent clean sheets, their form was no longer as good as it had been for previous weeks. There were an awful lot of like one goal wins there. And yet I still, and their XG overperformance was by far and away the highest in the league, which was something we flagged, I think, last week as well. But I still brought in Virgil van Dijk and doubled up on the Liverpool defence for the first time all season, rather than getting in Matt Doherty, who was actually the player that I was tipping on the podcast and kind of felt I should get, but didn't actually get. And this is like the classic.
The way.
This is the classic.
Believe me, it's always the way.
Oh, don't worry. It's been for years on Stag's Take on my Road to World column the same. But I think, look, 10 game weeks left to go. I think it's those more instinctive picks that you have to start to go with based on almost little data when you're struggling.
Yeah, I think that's putting me in the mind straight away of Ismaïla Sarr, your man from earlier on in the season, actually, who returned. And I think Brandon said this on the Wish Cheating as well, but I was shocked by how many people seem to have him in. Like, he just come back from injury. Like, that is a otherworldly, crystal ball-looking Witch King sort of stuff there. But yeah, never mind. Well, I mean, it's a nebulous world, isn't it, form? And I don't even know if we've gotten anywhere within the Middle Earth of what form is. But nonetheless, hopefully that was an interesting discussion for you guys, and hopefully it will help you think as you move forward how you judge fixtures versus form in your FPL team.
Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
All right, so we're back and it's on to the features now. A regular section where we speak about three things. It's the market forces, it's the Stag's Take, and it's Dad Watch. Let's start with market forces. Nick, the man across the numbers, what's going on?
So it's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang that's attracting most attention in the market. Well, you should have seen it last week somewhere. He was the third most transferred in player despite having a blank, which was very odd to see. But clearly a lot of attention towards the free-scoring Arsenal forward, or should I say winger, right now. We have 178,000 transfers in at time of recording. Very, very popular player, apparently, to currently be bringing in. Actually, a player I'm considering myself for that West Ham at home game. And it might even be a double, though. We don't know at this particular moment in time if there's going to be a double game week for Arsenal or not. But yeah, forwards actually dominating the market forces very heavily this week. The first, third, fourth and fifth most transferred in players are all forwards. Jota with 117,000 transfers in for Wolves, Jimenez 107,000, and Calvert-Lewin with 97,000 transfers in. Most people are selling Vardy, Abraham and Ings, all attracting lots of sales at the moment, perhaps partly because they've had slight injuries.
Yeah, don't forget Firmino as well. It's fifth most sold. As people learn the lesson that I learned earlier on in the season, that he's just really bloody unpredictable and also incredibly frustrating to watch if you own him, just looking for the pass every single time when you think, Bobby, just score, man, just score.
Yeah, and then looking to the midfielders, it is, of course, the Bruno Fernandes or Bernandes train that's leading the way. In spite of the fact that United have tough fixtures, he's already risen by 0.3 since he arrived into the club. Ismaïla Sarr, of course, the top scorer for the game week with 19 points, 2 goals and an assist to his name. After only coming back from injury the game week previous to that, is the second most transferred in midfielder, but only the seventh most transferred in player overall. You've got Kevin De Bruyne and Bukayo Saka leading up the rest of the top four. There, both of them kind of, I guess, reacting to having had their blank and now bringing them back in. And then fly, you fools, to Richarlison, who is the fifth most popular midfielder.
Yeah, and it looks like, Traore is the most transferred out midfielder. He's got a shoulder injury at the moment. A lot of people having to sell this guy, 75,000 transfers out for him. But also Anthony Martial attracting heavy sales. I don't know if that's a straight swap for Fernandes. A lot of people looking at the Martial's performance in that game. He also was I doubt, or had an injury problem before the game, which meant that a lot of people probably looking to sell him or sold him early on the Friday evening thinking he was injured, when in fact it was another sort of dodgy soundbite from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in terms of whether he was injured or not, very, very much up in the air. So Martial, the sixth most transferred out player right now, 50,000, also being sold in the midterms. Midfielders are Maddison and Grealish. No surprises there, perhaps. Well, Grealish didn't even play, but Maddison's seems bereft of form, at least, even though they've got quite a nice home match, as we talked about earlier, the fixtures versus form. Debate there.
Yeah, so it definitely seems like it's the attackers who are being shifted around this week. Especially interesting to see Saar in seventh, by default being the top point scorer this week, being the assassin that took Liverpool down. You'd be expecting him to have been rushed to, but no, it doesn't seem that way at all. The FPL buying community, the bots, as James and Serge put it, and doesn't seem to be behind Saar, which I don't know. Maybe it's to do with name recognition or brand awareness or something, that he's not bought in as much as other players like Aubameyang, who obviously is a very well-known player, therefore seems to be bought a lot. And the Man United crew are out for Fernandes, but it looks like he's also kind of got performance back it up. Next is Stag's take. Each week, Stag will be stepping up onto his soapbox to give his searing view of what's going on in the FPL community and maybe advise us of something, maybe advise us how to think about things a little bit better. So Stag, what do you think about this week?
Think about things better. You're putting under a bit of pressure there with that one. But with this this week, what I've thought about is the fact that we're going into the last 10 game weeks, and maybe a game week like the one just passed, where perhaps the fixture book definitely was turned upside down, and maybe the expectations we'd have of the big teams again were turned upside down, with Liverpool and Leicester, I guess, most notably losing at the weekend, and Chelsea, I guess, being held to that draw as well. And so what I was thinking about was the slow horse race, the fellowship, I guess, almost in the slow horse race at the final 10 games of last season, and just how poorly some of the, you know, so-called big clubs did, whereas some of the smaller clubs then thrived. When the burning eye of the community was on them, they climbed into their burrows. So whilst City and Liverpool just led the charge, City had 10 wins, no draws, no losses in their last 10. Liverpool had one draw and 9 wins on their way to losing the title last season. It was like they were obviously predictably good. And it looks like this season, at most, we can hope for one of those, for just Liverpool, I guess, to continue their canter. But even now, they seem an awful lot more mortal. But then you look at the rest of the, let's say, the top six as we know them now, or maybe the top seven if we bring Leicester and Arsenal both into this kind of thing to keep everyone happy. Like Chelsea, in spite of the fact that Champions League football was kind of a must for them, still only got 4 wins, 4 draws and 2 losses in that final bit. Arsenal, 4 wins, 2 draws, 4 losses, not too inspiring either. Of course, there was Manchester United going off a cliff under Ole in the latter half of his reign at the second half of last season. Just 3 wins, 2 draws, 5 losses, and only scored 10 goals in that final section of the season as well, which was almost as bad as Cardiff City and Fulham, who eventually ended up going down. United were 14th in that final period, only a little bit worse than Spurs, 1 point worse than Spurs, who picked up 11 points from their final 10 games of the season. And you couldn't say that Spurs are in better condition now than they were, you know, with 10 games to go under Poch at the end of last season, with their Champions League run diverting pretty much all of their energy. And so it's, I guess, with our risks and the transfers we're making, let's not get totally tied up in A, tying in what we were talking about, fixtures, but B, don't get tied up in reputations. Like towards the end of last season, the third best performing team, Nick, Tom, any guess who was the third best team for the last 10 games of last season? 19 goals for, 15 goals against?
Everton?
Everton were fourth, Tom. A good attempt. Wolves were sixth, Nick, so not a bad attempt, but it was actually Wise Boys, Crystal Palace.
Oh, yeah.
6 wins, 1 draw, 3 losses in
PVA,
the final few games.
PVA hell, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the PVA glue keeping them together as they went for the title, or not went for the title, but went for survival even. Yeah. And, you know, that's some serious performance. 19 points from 10 games. If they could do anything like that again, or if a team of their ilk could do something like that again, there's some serious value to be got from there. And I think there are plenty of sides that have that potential in the lower half of the table right now. Bournemouth are a pretty great example of it. You know, at this time last season, we would have been, definitely would have had had the likes of Ryan Fraser and Callum Wilson in our teams, only for them to win only three games, draw two and lose five towards the end of the season, as maybe safety was assured. That's not the same at all for them this season. Whereas Burnley, for example, performed extremely poorly at the tail end of last season, maybe because their safety was effectively secured. And that's how it is right now. They're actually making a European push at the moment. And maybe the likes of them, the likes of Sheffield United, may start to tail off, and maybe other teams are going to profit from that.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting time. I'm glad that you've given us a little glimpse into your plans here for now. Right, and Nick, finally, let's see how it's going with Ian for now. It's Dad Watch. It's been a bit of a sorry procession recently, Nick. I'm guessing it may have continued from what you said when we were off camera earlier on.
I think he's lost his eye a little bit in terms of the game. I think we all saw the brilliance of the White Wizard at the beginning of the season, but in terms of his overall performances, it's been numerous red arrows. Unfortunately, a 24 pointer, which actually is the same as me, fielded from seven men though, so four of his players didn't play at all. I warned him pre-deadline that Jamie Vardy wasn't going to play and suggested he make a last minute move to likes Jimenez. My advice wasn't heeded, even though it was given 2 minutes before the deadline, which is perhaps a bit harsh in my perspective. I just remember 2 minutes before the deadline that perhaps I should give him some warning about the early team news, and just did not give him enough time, unfortunately, to sort his team out. But he had the Jordan Ayew come on, get him 7 points this week, and also got points from Ben Foster in an unlikely clean sheet against Liverpool. So still bringing a bit of jam out of the bag there, I think, in terms of the overall performance. I think he's dropped now below you, Stag, sitting around the 1 million mark in terms of overall rank.
Oh, God, he's got down to Helm's Deep now.
Getting worse and worse. Oh, it just goes to show you that, eventually all things will even out in the end, won't they? Oh, gander's fallacy. Right, let's take a break there and move on to the questions.
Hope Ian doesn't mind me going in two-footed on him there.
That's all right.
Doesn't mind.
There's a rivalry starting to develop there after he pointed out that he was 1 point ahead. It's like, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's me versus Nick's dad.
He was beating us all at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Who got the assist?
So we're back, and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. And if you want to join the league code is EIKX03. And there's a new man actually at the top of the league, someone I haven't seen before. And that's Jake Gallagher with Sheffield Wednesday. Played his wild card this week for 41 points, aided by Lascelles and Charlie Taylor. That 0-0 really benefiting him there. He's overall rank 42nd at the moment, so very, very impressive. It seems like he's knocked Mark Bird and Luke Burgess off their pedestals. So Mark Bird's in second with Tweety Dreamers, also got 41 points. Luke Burgess in third with Lukewarm FC. In fourth is Adam Warner, decent week for him, 53 points. Berry 94, a nice green arrow for him. Shamby is in fifth. We've never forget Andreas Dikos with legend Lampard in sixth. And then Andreas Torgstrom with Syndicatet in seventh. Mud Moyanu Islam with goal in eighth. Neil Thompson with Venky's out, ninth. And Monu Shaveri with the cop. Red arrow for him in 10th with 29 points this week.
Cool. Yeah, well done, everybody. Especially well done to Jake, who's, I think, a new entrant to the league. But yeah, a ridiculous performance to enter on. So I can see why he's entered at that point. Right, moving on to the questions then. The first question is about the early news. So this week, the zeitgeist was dominated by Vardygate. That was the emerging news that Jamie Vardy was crocked in training and it was going to be a Nicky Nacho start. So Cheto Chip says to us, congratulations on the 100th episode, lads. Do you let early team news affect your plans? So he says, for example, he had planned Marshall and Lundstrom out this game week, but because of Vardy, he wanted to go to DCL. I didn't have enough time to sort out any other moves though, but luckily he got away with it because Marshall played and he obviously got the goal from DCL, so it was a good thing for him. But do we let early team news affect our plans, and I guess maybe we can ask what our views are as well of these early kind of team news, which seems to be proliferating with ITKs coming out of all sorts of dark places right now. Nick, what do you reckon?
So, yeah, I feel like there's been a little bit of criticism around the lack of information that we've got in the press conferences recently. And for instance, these injuries are never announced to us before you get, 10 minutes before the game. Yeah, he's been injured all week. Oh, well, we didn't know about it. You know, example, perhaps for this week's Danny Ings. And, you know, the confusion around Anthony Martial as well. And I do feel like there's been some extreme, there are some dodgy ITKs that perhaps can't be trusted, but there's been some extremely useful ones this year. Likes of Efio Rockstar, for instance, and he has helped a ton when it comes to the early news, and I think it's definitely something that I take into consideration and impacts when I make my transfer. So for instance, this week I waited until the last minute and it was declared that Harvey Barnes was definitely playing because I knew he hadn't started the previous game, which aided my decision to bring him in. And ultimately that particular decision didn't pay off in the long run, but I will be waiting again this game week, with Liverpool being the only game, 12:30, looking to see if there's any interesting news that might impact my transfers before the deadline. And I think it's definitely something that needs to be taken into consideration. I'm not against it as a concept. I feel like it's useful. I think you just have to sometimes take it with a pinch of salt, because you know not every source is trustworthy, and you do get lots of, you know, misinformation or fake news on Twitter when it comes to sort of, you know, in the know accounts and stuff. So just make sure you can trust the person that's giving out that advice is all I would say as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first thing to say is that you absolutely feel for people who are where I was in Australia or in Hong Kong or something, you know, 8 hours, 12 hours ahead, fast asleep, oblivious to the fact that their captain has been ruled out by a leaked team sheet or something like that. Like, that must be awful to wake up and just be like, oh my God, you know, I've just taken a hit on Vardy. And if I was awake at God knows when in the morning, I could have seen that and made a difference. But that is really bad. And that kind of unlevel playing field, I guess, is a bit annoying, and it doesn't kind of sit too right with me. However, as Nick said, I don't think we can really kind of claim a moral high ground here. It is information which is useful at the end of the day, and it is information which I don't really begrudge anybody using in terms of their FPL team. If you say, oh, you shouldn't really be using that, then I don't know, stats, listening to an FPL podcast, in investing time and finding out a bit more about FPL, surely those are also uneven things which some people elect to do and some people don't. I guess the other thing to say as well is that in terms of it affecting our plans, luckily we're at that point in the season now where value doesn't matter as much, so it's much more valuable to have the information that we're going to get from places like Rockstar, or, you know, in days past from places like the Anfield Express, than having that 0.1. so it's probably better to just kind of sit on your hands, exercise some self-control, and just wait until you kind of hear towards the deadline, I suppose. Stag, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I'll keep it brief on it, because you guys have pretty well covered the whole entire thing pretty well. But like, it's a blessing and a curse, the early teamers, because you can easily just, for example, feel for the people in different time zones, or just feel for the people who just happen to be busy. I missed the early team news about Aguero not being on the starting lineup for the game against Sheffield United a few weeks ago, because I was in a bloody French class, and so he ended up being my captain. Sure, he picked up 5 points, but I think my plan had been to sell him, and I didn't go through with that because I was under the impression he was going to play and he'd had two good games, and then I was a victim of it. So I know it's like, you don't necessarily need to be in Hong Kong or Australia to be a victim of the timing of it, but at the same time, my personal feeling is that with the casual FPL managers, and nobody is listening to this as a casual, you can stop trying to identify as a casual if you're listening here, like them, those casuals being fed more and more info, the sort of anorak details like pressers and in the know leaks, like, we need to use those to an advantage if we want to get a gain on these people. So look, of course it's going to lead to mistakes, and that's maybe the part of the skill of FPL, maybe be able to distill the credible in the nose from the not. But at this point in a poor season for someone like me, I need to take whatever marginal gain that I can take, and I will continue to try to. I brought in Ayoze Perez off the back of the news, and inevitably it did backfire this time, but I'm still quite happy with the two fixtures he has coming up as well, and I think he will play, so I'm okay with that. Like, look, the fact that Leicester played poorly doesn't mean that Kelechi Iheanacho, his place might be at risk, and maybe Perez will get a chance up there with Jamie Vardy, or even Vardy may not play because he should be fit for the weekend. But what does should mean, Brendan? And look, like, we've seen this similar danger in the summer as well, like when we're talking about like new signings or the emergence of new stars. Contrast the John Lundstrom preseason this season, or Arnon Bissaka last term, or even the season that Nathan Redden was playing as a striker for Southampton for a few weeks and scored once at the first game week, so we all remember it. or everyone being fooled by the likes of Reece Oxford or even Pulisic, who this summer, you know, came in because of course he'll play because he costs so much, but he didn't at the start of the season. And it took quite a few weeks for him to come through and come into good form, only for me to buy him as he was on form. And then he went out of form, to link into our conversations of earlier. But I think that's enough on that particular topic. And maybe I'll link onto today's theme again with Pras United's question. And he was asking about, all right, so all the well-performing players, the likes of Doherty, Jota, DCL, Pope, Sarr, they're all players who are likely to play in blank game week 31. So I know, Nick, you and I are both on the free hit strategy. And Tom, I presume you are too, but what Mr. Pras United is asking about isn't the best strategy to get these guys over the next couple of weeks and then wildcard in 32. So he's, I guess, advocating in real FPL terms a dead end to 31.
Yes, it definitely seems that way. I mean, so Stag and I have both used our wildcards, so it's a little bit different for us. But Nick, I suppose you're the man to really step in here with your wildcard intact. Like, are you considering, I mean, Stag just said that, you know, free hitting in 31 could be an idea, but the long and winding road to just basically aiming for getting 10, 11 men out in that 31 and then wildcarding straight after that dead end. Is that something that appeals to you at all? Because as Price said, it could be a really, really good strategy.
I don't really want to change my strategy at this particular moment in time. I think ultimately it depends. I suppose Liverpool, if they are knocked out of the cup, then that means I would have three players straight away in that 31, and that may make me change my mind. But I mean, my plans are still to free hit in 31. I've still got my wild card intact, so I'm quite comfortable with having that wild card in the bag and in the bank for later. And it means I do have that opportunity to free hit in 31. I'd have thought it would be the opposite way around, maybe, that, you know, people without their wild card would be more inclined perhaps to build a team towards 31 than those with their wild card.
Why?
Well, because you've already wild carded, so, you know, you can use your free hit in one of the double game weeks, for instance, so rather than so you've got less opportunity to make the sweeping changes that I have.
So, yeah. Like, when you say that, I think about a team that has more than five Wolves and Watford players going over the next few game weeks, and that alone is terrifying. And I think that's the sort of thing you'd have to do. And like that could go really well for you. We've seen both Wolves and Watford have good patches this season, but to really throw the eggs in one basket, and of course, a risky eggs in one basket is the sort of thing I'm going to have to do. But at the same time, I feel like at least negotiate, like do a slightly a zag on the free hit in 31. But that's not for me anyway, Tom.
No, I don't know. I'm not as down on it as you seem to be. Like, to be honest, okay. Like, what have Wolves got? Wolves got Brighton, West Ham, Bournemouth. And then they've got Aston Villa after that. So there's definitely grounds for a triple up there, right? Watford have got Palace, Leicester, Burnley. You know, double up, triple up, I can see what you mean. I think coming back from... So say you get six, seven of those players. I mean, you've got, you know, who else? Bournemouth, Burnley as well. They've got a guaranteed fixture. Now, we don't know who else has got a 31 at the time of recording. But if you're making a team full of 31-friendly players and you don't have your wild card, then you've got to spend the next few weeks unravelling that in order to be ready for the 34 and be ready for the 37 to some extent. I guess if you
see free
hit in 34, then...
I see what you're saying there. I think I don't really want to be spending my next few transfers. And I only got three of them before this 31 game week. I don't really want to be spending them using them to bring in players that I'm not particularly comfortable with. That I think that they've got the good performances. I want to be focusing on bringing in those key players like Aubameyang and some other ones over the next few game weeks. And it reminds me of that first season where we both got focused on bringing in that triple West Brom for that blank game week. And we ended up with, I think you ended up with Rondon. And that was
the season before we started, Nick. Actually.
Yeah, it was. And it was, I remember I had sort of, you know, Chris Brunt and Johnny Evans and... you know, I think they didn't keep a clean sheet over that particular period of time, and it just completely blew up our teams at that particular moment. And I don't really want a repeat of that. And, you know, to bring in, I know Watford had a really good game, but to bring in, you know, loads of Watford players and Norwich players or whoever else is playing, I think Burnley perhaps. So I think it doesn't really work for me.
Okay. No, I think at the moment, since Wolves have the kind of seductive cocktail of good fixtures, good form and a guaranteed 31, I can see why people are all kind of looking there. And just to bring another question as well on Ismaila Sarr. So Sir Sarr, Alex Tan asks if Sarr is the best differential going. Like, Watford as well, as we mentioned, as I said, Stag earlier, also a team who are in that sort of bracket. Like after beating Liverpool 3-0, they do have a few okay fixtures to come. I mean, they're not amazing, of course, but I mean, Palace away, feasibly tough nut to crack them. Leicester at home, Burnley away, Southampton at home. An okay next four. So you can see why people have started to look at Sarr, especially after they got the 19-pointer, and other players as well, and think, well, they could be the players who could kind of fire you up the leagues and be that sort of player for you. In that vein then, just talk about Sarr for a second. Either of you think he is worth kind of jumping on? No, Anthony, you had him for a few returns in the past, and you know, is he going to return to your team? Will it be the return of the Sarr?
So when I looked at that Leicester, that Watford team under Nigel Pearson, you know, they'd had a good first few weeks, and all three of Deulofeu at the time and Sarr and Deeney had been firing. And it kind of seemed to me that Deeney was extremely reliant at that point, what, 8-9 game weeks ago, on penalties. And so Sarr was the option that I went for as a midfielder, Deulofeu being a forward. He was just getting that little bit more reward for similar underlying stats and seemingly similar outcomes. And so I think I got three returns from him. I think I got a goal and maybe two assists from him over the course of three game weeks, which was pretty good going, or maybe it was just two of those. Either way. And then he got his injury, and so I had to sell him. And so that's how I unfortunately didn't end up having him for this game week. I had Decore right up until the day before, I guess, and I sold him. So maybe I would have ended up selling Sarr ahead of the Liverpool game. Who knows what sort of alternate reality we'd have been in. But I think that just kind of goes to show I'm definitely a believer in Sarr. I like what he does. I think he adds an awful lot to that Watford team, and you've seen how they've really dipped back without him in the last few weeks without giving any sorts of like searing detail on it. I think they just really lack the impetus when they've not got a player of his creativity and ability on one side of the pitch. Like he is a player who both poses a risk to the opponent's goal and could actually set other players up. And we don't have that many players in that 6 million bracket who can provide that. And I think that's why he's so interesting. And he's got plenty to play for. That's not a team that's going to be going on the beach at all anytime soon. And that's what interests me is most about Sarr.
Yeah, just the numbers in that one game alone are absolutely crazy, aren't they? Two goals, one assist, next year of 1.42, seven pen box touches, four shots on target. It's against the best team in the league, right? The best defence in the league, and he's able to do that. Like, yeah, that's certainly very interesting indeed, especially like the way he played as well. It's just one of those things where you kind of think, God, that guy's got to come in for me. There's definitely kind of an echo of Raheem Sterling about him, especially that second kind of lovely finish and the kind of his position as well, receiving the ball from Deeney, absolutely brilliant. So there's definitely... as a talisman, the Hertfordshire talisman, mm-hmm. Sarr, I think is definitely in my consideration. He could be such an easy move for me from either Perez or Barnes. It's just the case that, well, I mean, they've got Villa, Leicester, so do I really want to jump off them and commit some sort of FPL suicide by doing so?
I think he's certainly, you know, a fantastic pick. Ownership was 1.3%. He would have been the best differential for that Liverpool game. I do remember, actually, last time they played Liverpool earlier in the season was before he'd done much in the Premier League at all. He'd had a bit of a slow start to his career. And I remember Sadio Mane saying to Troy Deeney to look after him and, you know, to take care of him as a player because he's a quiet boy and a shy boy. And I think after that, it was the following week that he really impressed and sort of came out the limelight in that Manchester United game where he got a goal and assist the following week. And, you know, having a mentor like Mane, who's one of the best players in the Premier League, same nationality as Sarr, I think it's very beneficial for him. And he's certainly a player that's really starting to shine in terms of his performances. Obviously, he had a little bit of an injury, but apart from that, you know, he's been fantastic since that week, game week 18.
Cool. And I guess another in the same vein, I mentioned Wolves as part of that kind of Wolves-Watford double up of being in the Goldilocks zone when it comes to the players we're looking at. Jota. So Medwoods asks, is Jota and Jimenez a thing? Juliet Deal says this with her going for a Jim Jot Bolly sort of trio. And at TA Arnold also asks, is it time to jump on Jota? Taylor Cross also asks a very, very similar question. Is double Wolves a good idea? This is an interesting one as well, isn't it? Because like having a double from a strike force is something with a wink to Frank and Neil Murray, something we haven't seen since days of Suarez and Sturridge. Doubling up on the defender and midfielder has been seen a lot more this season. So double defence from Liverpool, KDB and Raheem Sterling. thing. But I mean, I did have a look at Jota's stats, tweeted on that earlier on, put on Instagram as well. Please follow us on there. And I found that last season, over the last 10 game weeks, he actually scored 4 goals, got 3 assists. And during that time, he was second for shots in the box and second for big chances amongst midfielders over the last 10 this time last year. So yeah, he's got that kind of form as being a late bloomer. 3 goals and 2 assists in the last 2. I mean, Jimenez as a implacable rock in our team. Could Jota be the one that we'd be considering looking at?
So I guess these Wolves players are definitely something that we've focused on whilst you're away, Tom. And I think the Wolves triple up was something we've discussed a little bit. And I think Nick and I had very much fallen on, if there was a triple to be done, it was probably to be Doherty, Traore, and then Jimenez. I think Jota's form since that, I think he's 5 goals in 5 games, something like that, in all competitions. It's pretty spectacular. And so I think it's hard to ignore, as you point out, the underlying stats are there as well. And like, he has got form for this, that he did this as well last term, where he came good and stat padded towards the end of the season. Like, perhaps we should be kind of, I should be renaming the Iosi Perez zone, the Perez Jota zone at this rate, given how good he is at this tail end of the season. With Wolves fixtures turning up, I definitely see a strong argument for having him. The 3 striker slots, especially at that price point, are for once really jammed up. I think in previous seasons we've been kind of starved of options at lower price ranges for strikers, but that this season that really isn't the case. And so, like, you're making a sacrifice of a Dings-ish character or a DCL character to get him in. But if you believe in form and fixtures, and we've got both of those, the Goldilocks zone, as you put it, Tom, then I think he's a pretty good pickup to have.
But certainly, I think with a sort of formation change there, he looks like he's a key member of that attack, and certainly can't be dropped as far as the manager's concerned. I think he still gets substituted every game, but it doesn't really matter if you're banging in a couple of goals and an assist as well. So I think in terms of an FPR asset, and with all his fixtures with the form, you know, he has to be very, very strongly considered for our teams. It's just, I think the problem we've got is how we fit him in into a already congested front line when we've got, you know, the likes of Calvert-Lewin. We're trying to talk about the likes of bringing in Aubameyang as well, and we've all got Jimenez already. Potentially, I think if he was a midfielder, he'd be straight in. But I think in terms of being forward, makes it very challenging. I think perhaps if you had Danny Ings, he's only got 1 goal in 6 appearances, a straight swap would be potentially a reasonable option. I don't know if that's one you've been considering at all, Tom.
I don't know. With Ings, I'm not too sure whether I want to lose him. He's still got Newcastle, Norwich. Arsenal is off, actually. They just lost to... They've just beaten Portsmouth, so that 31 game is off for Southampton and Watford. So they've got 29, 30 and 32. Could I sell Dings after game week 30, after the Norwich game? Probably. As you mentioned in the form versus fixtures discussion, Dings is one of those players I just completely missed the boat this year, and I jumped on way too late. I should just let that boat go rather than swim after it. Could I swap him for Jota? Yeah, I could definitely see myself doing so. I need to get over my initial hatred from jumping on him at the start of this season, him doing absolutely nothing for 5 game weeks and then getting 9 points since I sold him. No, it could be a very potent differential to have the 2 of them, for sure. It's just whether it kind of fits your team to do so, and whether it blocks something like, I don't know, having Doherty. But I guess losing Traore from consideration due to that dislocated shoulder means that Jota is, I guess, going to be part of the Wolves team more often than not, and also could be part of our team more often than not. It definitely, there's a space open for him alongside Doherty and Jimenez. So, yeah, why not? I'm not sure I'd sell him for Ings. I'm probably too scared of the numbers on Ings, but... Maybe I'll think about that more over the course of the week.
And I guess then, having been talking about tripling up on Wolves, James Quirrell is asking us actually about moving away from triple Liverpool and perhaps moving to a double. James points out that there's only 3 to 4 plum fixtures left for the Reds towards the end of this season. So are the alternatives such as Doherty, meaning that we should jump off? Maybe we should just have, let's say, the double Liverpool defence, or maybe a defender and a midfielder. Nick, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, there's no denying that their form isn't as imperious as it was earlier in the season, especially after that Watford defeat. But there were signs of it as well in that game against West Ham, and also the Champions League match, which they lost as well. And I think losing the likes of Jordan Henderson has had a bigger impact, perhaps, that bigger impact than managers would have thought, as well as James Milner, and also giving Dejan Lovren any form of game time at all has also had a bit of an impact to their form. But ultimately, I can't look at selling one of my Liverpool players at the end of the day. They've been pretty much, even though we've all owned them, they've been the key to most of our successes and saved our bacon in multiple game weeks. Just looking at three of my last five game weeks, for instance, just the three players and a captain scored at least 50% of my points. So just three players contributing that sort of level to my level of my points just means that they really are key. And I don't feel like there's a financial need to sell any of them either. You know, if I wanted to bring like Darcy, I could actually straight swap him for Rico with the amount of money I've got in the bank, for instance. So it's not really something that I can truly consider, especially with the Bournemouth home match, which we all know how Salah did against him the other season. So I think for me, I think triple Liverpool has to stay. I think in terms of the auto captain Salah, that is a question. You know, we could be looking at the likes of Aubameyang as a decent captain pick against West Ham at home, you know. So I don't necessarily think he's an auto captain necessarily, and we quadruple up essentially on Liverpool as opposed to triple up week in week out. But I can't sell one of them. I don't think I will be right until the end of the season, perhaps, unless the double game weeks suggest I should.
I think I could see why. So, for example, you know, got Bournemouth this weekend, and then it depends a lot as well on whether they get that 31 game. If they don't have that 31 game against Crystal Palace, they've got Bournemouth, Everton, blank, and City. So that's four games where maybe if you're from the Liverpool double up at the back, assuming you're not going to sell Trent and you've got Robertson or VVD, maybe the door is open to selling him for Doherty for the time being. If you've got Mahler, I don't know, again, whether you're going to be going for a set where you're going to be going. The likes of Raheem Sterling haven't really been jumping up. Maybe a downgrade to Bruno Fernandes and then using that money to do something else could be something you'd do. But ahead of the Bournemouth game, I'm not too sure. We're still waiting for information. But a lot of the Plum fixtures are kind of... there are still some decent-looking fixtures to come. 33 Aston Villa, 34 could be a double game with Brighton, and 35 Burnley. So there are some OK games on the horizon. I think it is a very vexed question, isn't it? Because, you free up a lot of money, but what are you going to use that money for is my question right now. It's more about slots and capacity, if anything. Some people you might be thinking, well, okay, I haven't really got the space to fit Doherty in right now, so maybe it does make sense for me to sell Robertson in order to fit him in, because I don't want to sell Ender Stevens or something like that. I don't want to sell Pereira. So it really is kind of personal, but I think with the triple, I'm probably not going to be selling for the time being, as boring as that sounds, and cause I don't see very much a value advantage, at least, and points advantage too. Stag, what do you reckon?
For me with Liverpool, I think whilst they do all of a sudden seem quite mortal based on the Watford defeat, the Atletico defeat as well in the Champions League, where they actually definitely looked kind of lost, I thought, for the first time all season, and they definitely showed shades of that in the latter half against Watford as well, and then all the narrow wins that they had. And whilst Nick, okay, they did contribute to 50% of your points because it was always the players that we have that were doing the scoring. So Liverpool may have been poor, but still it was Salah, it was Mane, it was Trent, it was maybe the defence that were actually still kind of coming through for us. And that's part of the problem with them too. It's like the team goes badly and yet the individuals still come through. So there is an element of just do not disturb the water when it comes to this Liverpool team. And as well, maybe getting at what you were talking about with the fixtures, Tom, okay, they have the Champions League issue and they do need to prioritise that in the short term. But if you look at this, like immediately you'd expect a huge reaction against Bournemouth. Okay, that's one game week down. That's been a fertile hunting ground for the Reds for years. Okay, then it's game week 30. It's Everton. And that's not a game that they can disrespect, especially given the backdrop of humiliating Everton in the FA Cup by disrespecting them earlier in the season. No way can they get away with that twice, and no way will Klopp think they can get away with it twice. For me personally, 31 is a free hit game week, and that's irrelevant of what happens really with fixtures. That's just what my plan is, so I won't be selling them that game week. And then it's 32, when I believe they can wrap up the title at City. So it's hard to see that being a clear sell day either. And then we're bridging quite closely to potential double game weeks, to a good game against Villa. And so whilst the unbeaten season is no longer a thing and the Championship is definitely in the bag, like bar some sort of like coronavirus-infused disaster for them, I just don't see how there's even a logical place to sell them now. There isn't a logical reason to sell them, getting at the budget thing that you guys were talking about. So whilst I think I'd be tempted to, given my position, given my need to kind of do something drastic, there's no reason to do it now.
It's such hygiene, isn't it? It's just hygiene factor. It's the fact that it is even like though they lost 3-0 to Watford, yeah, there are moments in that watching that game where I'd find it very difficult. You know, TAA and Salah/Mane were just locks in most people's teams. I find it very difficult to watch Liverpool without owning the two fullbacks. Personally, they are Liverpool's number 10s. I've said many times this year, and I think they are going to be kind of stuck in my team for the time being. But you never know. Come Saturday, actually, if Robertson isn't in the team, then maybe he will become dirty. I just don't know. But I'm fairly sure I'll be keeping on hold of them for the time being. All right. So on that note, let's move on to transfers and captains this week. Then I think it's fair to say that this is going to be a short session, because we don't know, just because we're waiting to see what happens in game week 31, which we'll know a bit more about during the FA Cup, from the outcome of the FA Cup ties this midweek, as well as any hopeful team leaks. So it means we're probably all going to be sitting on our transfers until 11:25 on Saturday morning, I assume, right?
Yeah, well, 12:25 where I am, but I'll still be sitting on my transfer. It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Yeah, I'll still be sitting on my transfer. Like right now, it's looking like a Salah captaincy because I lack creativity. And it's even looking like I may not be making a transfer. I have a solid 11. And I think maybe with the 31 in mind, it's just, you know, even if I do decide to pivot, I'd have two transfers. I can maybe do another one of my blessed -8 mini wildcards to try and fix everything after that. So probably no movement.
The -8 is tempting, to be honest, looking at my team. It's just this was the game week, essentially, with every team having fantastic fixtures and it all looking very exciting. So unfortunately, instead, I've ended up with Chelsea, Manchester City and Manchester United and a Brighton goalkeeper as well. So it's not looking too great for my team. I'm tempted by... I'm actually tempted just to say goodbye to Matt Ryan, because I'm fed up with this guy. He's just wound me up royally ever since I brought him in, and just bringing Denders, and that's what I mean. Just sort out my team, just getting the Sheffield United goalkeeper for the Norwich at home game. I know it sounds a bit controversial, but I could sell Calvert-Lewin for Aubameyang, even though Calvert-Lewin's in fantastic form. But I've got the money in the bank, so I don't know what else I can do with it, to be honest. Or I could try and free up some other money by changing Greenwood to Aubameyang, but then that involves lots of contortions to my team, so I'm not sure how I do that, but otherwise I've got the captaincy on Salah right now.
Yeah, fair enough. Sounds like your team's an army of orcs, Nick. Might be worth, as you said, just pulling the plaster off taking a -8. As being 15 points behind you, that would be really, really good if you did take a -8. Well, go ahead, take a -12, take a -16, Nick. I think that'd be a really, really good idea. What am I doing this week? I don't even know yet. Maybe Perez, maybe Barnes out for Sarr, maybe Kun for Aubameyang. It looks like this double game week may be going ahead. There are a few rumbles on Man City forums, etc. I don't talk about too much, but if that does happen, I'll be looking at probably bringing Aubameyang in and captaining him. But yeah, I think we just kind of leave this for now, because we simply just don't know the time of recording.
So to round it off, just to say, we are Who Got the Assist. Our Twitter is at WGTA_FPL. You'll find Nicholas at WGTA_Nick, and you'll find me, FPL Stag, at FPL Stag. We have an Instagram, which is WGTA.FPL. You can listen and subscribe across the podding spectrum, and our lead code is EIKX03.
Yep, and last week, there's a theme to every pod. Some of you may have picked up the references on this particular pod, and last week the theme was The Big Lebowski, so lots of people got that on Twitter, lots of gift sharing, which was always fun as well.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with the man himself, Ben Crellin. When everything's settled down and we've chip season dawns, we'll have Ben to come on and tell us all about, well, how we're going to navigate this most interesting of times. But in the meantime, I hope to assist you. I'm glad to be back. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.